We're sitting in the studio with Ron Heichel for Your Campus Today, and we're talking to Ron because he's just been presenting at the University of Manitoba for basic income. So this is a very interesting thing for the University of Manitoba, and we have a lot of connections here for basic income, but of course this is something that is also really applicable to the rest of the world currently. Now, Ron was the executive director of the Basic Income Experiment in Dauphin, Manitoba. And if you haven't heard about this experiment already, Manitoba was a pioneer in experimenting basic income. Basic income is a flat amount of money given to all citizens. The idea is that it serves in conjunction or replaces things like employment and income assistance, welfare, social assistance, and yeah, it's a sort of exciting idea and it's gaining a lot of steam. So in your presentation today, it was learning from the past and guiding to the future. So how do the experiments of the past compare to the experiments today?
Well, let me suggest that the actual nature of the basic income program that we were testing used a model called a negative income tax. And the way the negative income tax works is a little different than what you explained, but not much. Basically, what you do is you establish by family size the minimum amount that you believe a family in Canada in the year 2017 would take to meet their basic cost of existence, staying alive, food, rent, clothing, a few other things. And then you look at how much money that family earns, if any, and how much money it may get from other government income support programs. And you basically apply a calculation rate to figure out how much money that family should get every month. So the amount will vary depending upon their other income. So mm-hmm. It won't be a flat rate amount. It'll vary on how much they earned by working, how much they got from some other government program. The fundamental idea of basic income is that it guarantees everybody who's eligible in the country for the very first time basic financial security, so that whatever may happen to them, they're going to have, by family size, enough money to meet the cost of life, the cost of sustaining life. Now, the system also needs to respond very quickly to variations in your other earned income. It is the case that the lower somebody's income is, two things happen. The greater the variation in their income, because they could be working 12 hours on Monday and no hours at all on Tuesday, the whole sort of 0 hours thing. But it's also the case that their employment itself is more precarious, that they might lose their job, or they might get suddenly offered two jobs. So the system behind the basic income needs to be able to respond very quickly to variations in how well off the family is from other sources. And what we were testing was not only the effect of basically abolishing financial insecurity, but also the ability of the system, the payment system, to adjust itself very quickly to changes in the family circumstances.
And so what did you find? Was it able to adjust, and were you able to provide a kind of basic need?
Yes. The answer to those two questions is yes. We were also looking at a related important question. What was the effect on taking care of people's financial need on their willingness to work? There's been an assumption that's been part of society for hundreds of years that the only reason some people work is because otherwise they're going to starve to death or they get thrown out of their house. What we proved was that that is, in fact, not the case, in that the number of people who, depending on how you want to measure it, dropped out of the labor force or worked a few hours or a lot of hours was very small, that the number of people who basically took the money and worked fewer hours was relatively small. But we also looked at what people did if they worked a few hours less in replace working. And what we found was that in many cases, they did things like putting the time into childcare, putting the time into caring for an elderly relative, putting time into acquiring more human capital. They went to university, took a course, stayed in high school, devoted some time to volunteering in the community. They were doing, in many cases, things that were socially quite beneficial. So it wasn't simply the people who were responding in a negative way, by, you know, going to the bar or spending time, you know, watching the baseball games. But they were, in fact, in many cases, using the time more productively than they would have otherwise.
So that's super interesting. And then these results, even though you found these results to be positive, were shelved for 47 years.
Yeah, basically, the MinCom experiment took place in Winnipeg. It was a so-called dispersed sample. We went around and selected individual families and in some rural areas of Manitoba. We went and selected individuals to get a variety of family size and employment history and number of children and amount of money being earned and so on. So we had a variety. But in Dauphin, we put an office in downtown Dauphin and basically said, anybody in this town who lives here, whose income by family size is below this threshold amount, should come down to our office and fill out a form and we'll send you some money. So that we were running the program in Dauphin just as though you would run it if it were an actual permanent program. Because we wanted to find out, first of all the people who were potentially eligible for basic income, how many of them actually applied. Did 100% or was it something less? And it turned out to be something less. We had in the town and rural municipality of Dauphin, there were in those days about 10,000 people, and roughly 2,000 of them, or about 20% of the population, actually received some payment over the course of the experiment. So about 20%, which would be roughly what you'd expect to happen in the population in general. So the conclusion was that we could afford to establish a basic income program for society as a whole, and both the cost from reduction of work and the cost of providing income supplementation could be, if it was efficiently managed, properly affordable by society.
And so we've now started to revisit this idea, and we're revisiting it in the form of other pilot experiments.
Yes, in Ontario.
In Ontario.
Yes.
And then there's also global pilot experiments. Right. So the kind of globe is interested in this, and
yes,
it's interested in it for, there's reason to be interested in it from a lot of different perspectives.
Yes.
But how are you seeing the experiments that are being run now vary from the experiment that you ran?
There are some similarities and some differences. The Ontario one that I have some general familiarity with is using what they call a tax credit model, which means they're trying to drive the similarity between the payment system and the income tax system. And it's an interesting approach. My concern about it is a little bit that if you're not responding on a monthly basis to changes in people's income, you might be either underpaying them or overpaying them. But it's running for, you know, roughly 3 years, which was the same duration for MinCom. And it's looking at the other forms of transfer income, social assistance, what's called ODSP in Ontario, some other things, in combination with, in effect, a top-up payment by the basic income program. So in many ways, it's quite similar. And while Ontario has not yet committed itself to replacing any existing income support programs, it certainly has the potential to do that once they've completed the experiment and have the full body of data, that might be something that they'd want to examine more closely.
What are the ways in which you think this kind of new experiment will possibly change the political landscape and possibly forward this idea more effectively? Or do you think it will kind of, maybe your hopes and your reasonable predictions about what will happen then with this set of data?
Well, I wish them well. I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been 47 years since the last time we tried this out, started trying it out. And I fear if we have to wait another 47 years, I might not be around to see it, though I hate that thought. So I'm hoping it's successful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping enough can be learned so that the cabinet of the government of Ontario, whoever they are, we're going to get an election next spring, would be confident enough to put a basic income system in place. We don't know what the answer to that is going to be, but we'll find out, you know, within 3 years, I hope. And if it turns out that they do initiate it, then the question becomes, how efficient is the system in terms of achieving the hopes and dreams for a guaranteed income. My view is that it can be, if properly designed, very efficient and can be made to work in a way that produces an enormous human benefit. For example, if you give people the option of being certain that they're never going to starve, they're never going to get thrown out of their house because they haven't paid their rent, and so on and so forth, that they will then begin to make a greater investment because they think they can afford it, in their own development, in their own human capital, in their own education, in the effectiveness of their own search for another job, take the time they need to find a decent job that they're really committed to, that they like, and then stay in it longer. So there are a whole series of ways in which people can use the basic income to improve the functionality of their decision making and to prepare themselves more effectively for having a successful life. They basically, because they know what they need individually, what they need better than anybody else, better than any bureaucracy, better than any form filler, and that basic income, properly designed and managed, could create those opportunities for people.
That sounds like an incredibly exciting prospect. One sort of question to top it off: we've talked about some of the reasons that basic income can further human capital, further the human experience, provide a kind of sense of security. There are those reasons to justify basic income. There are reasons of kind of eliminating the red tape. As you said, people know their own needs better than form fillers. The idea of managing, like promoting household labor in a positive way, and then a technological advancement. So one of the arguments I've heard for basic income is that we have so much technology that is changing the workforce as we know it.
Right.
And this is a way of changing the way humans interact with that workforce.
Well, among the potential benefits of basic income, and the analysis of the Dauphin data showed this, is that people's health improved, their mental health improved, and a larger number of teenagers stayed in high school long enough to complete it. There was also a decline in the incidence of domestic violence, because a significant contributor to domestic violence is family financial insecurity. So there were, and of course, as the utilization of the healthcare system goes down, because people are healthier, the costs go down. So society is saving a significant amount of money in foregone healthcare, in foregone mental health, people entering the labor force tend to be better trained because they've stayed in high school longer, they've completed high school rather than quitting. So there are enormous social benefits to the existence and the successful operation of an efficient basic income system.
Well, I hope these experiments go well. Yeah. I wish you all the best.
And thank you very much.
Thanks for coming to talk with us. And for those of you who are listening, there's a lot of work being done on basic income within this campus. So hopefully we'll chat about it in different ways as the year goes on.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.